you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 194 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. I trust everybody had a wonderful holiday season and that you're looking forward to the start of a brand new year. I know we are here at The Law Entrepreneur, and we're grateful, very grateful, for all of our listeners and the continued support that you show this program. To say that we couldn't do it without you is obviously an understatement. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I do appreciate it. Today, my guest is Jason Schultz. Now, Jason is a workers' compensation attorney here in Maryland, and he's been on his own as a solo for going on 3 years now. And we're going to hear him talk about, you know, what motivated him to go into workers' compensation as a practice area, and what were the challenges that he faced as a solo, and the importance that he puts on technology for creating efficiencies in his practice that allow him to continue to grow and expand throughout the state. So it's a great story about how to create a solo practice and what it takes, and I hope you enjoy the interview as much as I did conducting it. So without any further delay, here is Jason Schultz. Jason Schultz, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I don't know about an honor, but I'm delighted to have you. Jason, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, great. Again, my name is Jason Schultz. I have a practice up in Baltimore that focuses on workers' compensation. We have a statewide practice. We represent injured workers from Baltimore to Ocean City to Cumberland, down to Southern Maryland around D.C. Our office is based in Baltimore, and we've been started this practice about 2.5 years ago. It'll be 3 years in August.
Well, that's terrific. What drew you to workers' comp?
Well, my background is in union organizing. So after college, I grew up in a union family, a labor family, and after college was a union organizer for a healthcare union. Uh-huh. And so I'd always worked in the sort of since college and then sort of in workers' rights and protecting workers. And once I had done that and decided I wanted to do that in a different avenue, so went to law school at UB and then started at a firm, a statewide firm in Maryland whose focus is on workers' compensation, and got training there on how to do that. But my background is in workers' rights and unions, so it was a natural progression for me to just protect workers in a very different way than I had been sort of outside the contract, which I normally would work inside the contract of a union contract. This is a way to protect them outside of that.
Well, it's interesting that you would come to workers' comp with a forethought. I mean, it sounds like it's right in your wheelhouse from, you know, your upbringing and where you had spent your time and focus, as you said, on workers' right, and workers' comp is a natural outgrowth of that. I think, and maybe it's just my misguided understanding, but I think there's a whole lot of workers' comp attorneys who come to it almost through the back door. They start off, as I did, as a personal injury attorney, and then add workers' comp to their practice. But you did it the other way around. You came to it with the understanding that that's exactly what you wanted to do from the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, once I got to law school, I wouldn't say I had a great sense of it before law school, right? Because it's, as you know, unless you're somehow intimately involved in workers' comp, you don't really understand what it is or what it means or how it impacts anyone. So, but it was just a natural fit for me. The language is very similar in terms of going into people's houses, trying to, you know, encourage them if they're joining or forming a union or organizing. It's a very similar type of thing. It's just a different, very different type of protection than a union contract. And so it's a very natural progression for me.
And I don't think the general public has much of a sense of how big an issue injuries in the workplace really are.
Not at all. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, in Maryland last year, there were approximately 95,000 workers who got injured on the job. And that's only ones who actually reported it to their employer, and their employer reported that to the Maryland Workers' Comp Commission. So it's a huge issue, not an issue, it's just the nature of the economy that people get hurt. And I don't think anyone really appreciates how many different classes of society and employers that it actually impacts until you're in it. And then once you're in it, it's an eye-opening experience for an injured worker, that is.
Yeah, and sadly, I'm getting off on, you know, something that we don't normally talk about on this this show, that's the actual politics of the legal profession or this practice area. But sadly, there's so many workers who, in fact, are injured on the job who, as you noted, don't report it for a number of different reasons we don't have to go into. But they don't report it, and their rights in that regard really are trampled.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know what that's the only reported number.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Double it, you know, probably.
Easily
when you're dealing with, you know, undocumented workers, right? They're not reporting anything. Not just undocumented workers, but a lot of workers are scared. The first question I probably get from someone who's not been through it is, am I going to get fired? Right. And for someone who's a blue collar worker who is supporting a family, you know, the risk of losing their job is they're not willing to risk it. So if you double that and make it 118,000 people who are injured on the job or whatever that is, you know, so they, and the majority of them don't get an attorney. So, you know, that's another level of losing protections, by not pursuing the full kind of access of rights they have under the law.
Yeah, and I think, I think that's really another important aspect of the practice area is that, you know, people might know to report it to their employer, and the employer, I mean, let's face it, most times the employer is looking to minimize their exposure or minimize their expenditures, and the employee may not be getting the full breadth of what they would be entitled to, and that's where, you know, really qualified workers' comp attorney can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. I mean, most people, unless they've been through it before with an attorney, have no idea what their rights are. No. And honestly, I don't even put it all really on employers. I mean, I'm an employer, you know, and I do workers' comp. If I didn't do workers' comp and I was an employer, I wouldn't have really any idea.
Sure.
What the process is or what the rights are for employees. I mean, it's more driven, as you know, by insurance companies are the ones that are making 99% of the decisions in any workers' compensation case, not really typically an individual employer.
Right, right, right. So let's talk about then, so you were with another firm and you got some training and some background into this practice area. What motivated you to go out and open a solo practice?
I'd always had it in my head. You know, I think, I don't think I was new, okay, I'm going to this firm, I'm going to leave in a set number of years. But it was always kind of an itch in the back of my head that I wasn't kind of on the path that I was meant to be on. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I knew exactly what that meant, but it just never kind of went away, you know, until I kind of just came to the realization that, hey, I wanted to create something completely on my own with my own culture and my own way of doing things. And so I think I've probably thought about it, you know, really seriously about 5 years into the firm I was at. But, you know, a lot of people think about leaving a firm, you know, really at that 5 year, you know,
almost, kind of, almost weekly,
almost weekly. Right. But the percentage of people that actually do it is, you know, small. So it took me another kind of 2 years probably of really thinking about it and talking to my family about it and, until I finally decided, hey, this is what I have to do. And if I fail, I'll just go get another job. Yeah. But I don't want to be in a situation where, you know, I've got three kids and I'm telling them, hey, follow this dream of yours. And if it works out, great. If it doesn't, then you can't look back and say, I didn't try it. And so that was my mindset from the very beginning.
I think there's a lot of folks who their motivation for going solo is that the environment they're in wasn't the one that they envisioned for themselves. And then they may not be able to put their finger on exactly what it is, whether it was, I don't have the office I wanted, or I don't have the clientele that I wanted, or I don't really have the culture or the joy for the work that I was hoping to have as an attorney. I know there's something different out there for me that I need to go after. And it's something of a nebulous concept for many. And it sounds like you're kind of in that realm.
It's a feeling, right? It's that voice inside your head that says you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, or you're not on the path that you should be on. And I was at a great firm. I mean, I was at a great firm. I got great training there, and you know, they're the largest workers' compensation firm in the state, the most respected firm in the state by far. And so, you know, I always had a great situation there with great people, but I didn't want to grow into or work someone else's vision. You know, I wanted to create my own, and ultimately, if I didn't do that, I was never going to be happy.
I think we call that the entrepreneurial spirit.
Maybe.
You know? I think that is the essence of it.
It could be, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think it probably is. It's like, it's not always a situation where, you know, some people do it because they get fired. Or
yeah, exactly.
Or a thousand other reasons or yeah, for it to they, happen. But
they left the practice to have a baby, and when they came exactly. back, the only option they had was to go out on their own. There's a number of different reasons, but I do think an understated and maybe an underappreciated aspect of it is are those folks like yourself that are in a great position, nothing to complain about, making good money, working in a good job, have a great office, and no shortage of clients, but it's not their vision. It's not
correct.
What they saw themselves doing, and they can't really put their finger on it per se. And I know there's a lot of our audience that this resonates with. And I think it's that, you know, churning in their gut that says, you know, I want to do this on my own. I want to create my own vision.
And I think for people that are thinking about that, and I talk to people all the time that reach out to me that want some advice about possibly going out on their own, you get more backlash from the community that you're in when you leave in a situation like that than if you're fired or there's a split up of a firm, because no one understands it.
Exactly.
And everyone thinks you're crazy. And everyone thinks you're going to fail, right?
100%.
Because why would you leave the perfect situation to go into something where most people fail doing it, right? Yeah. And so that's when you have to have people around you that, you know, that you're able to, you know, kind of block that, all that noise out and focus on the sounds in your life of people that are supportive and of you. So it's a very different thing.
It's so funny. I think you put your finger on it, because like you said, if people are forced into the situation, or if they're the circumstances dictate that going solo is the next logical step, the support around them is, you got this, you know, we believe in you. You can handle this. You know, this is nothing. If you are, as you said, coming from a firm where you got it made and you know, there's no real problems, you like the people you work with, and cases are good. And you decide, but I want my own vision. I have something bigger in mind. People look at you like, what are you crazy?
Yeah. Why would
you, most small businesses fail in their first year, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for all that support.
You know, people saying to you, you are making a huge mistake for your family. You know, it gets to that kind of level at that time. You know,
and that's usually family telling you that.
A lot of times. Yeah, I'm really fortunate for me, it was the exact opposite. My family and wife, who was pregnant with our third child when I left, on top of everything, said, let's do it. Let's go do it.
Wait a second. You left with a pregnant wife?
Correct.
Wow, you are a glutton for punishment.
That's absolutely. For sure.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. If you've been throwing money at Google and you haven't been happy with the casework you're attracting, it's time to switch up your marketing strategy. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of legal marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel or push you to spend thousands on pay-per-click ads. Instead, they work with solo and small law firms to stay top of mind with your network to increase referrals, which we all agree are the best kinds of clients. One of the biggest mistakes attorneys make is that they fail to stay top of mind with their network. We're bombarded with information every day, and it's easy for people to forget who you are and what you do. Spotlight Branding's marketing strategy makes it nearly impossible for your network to forget about you, which means they'll think of you first when they or someone they know needs legal help. You can absolutely grow your business without competing for a spot on the first page of Google search. Spotlight Branding has turned hundreds of lawyers across the country into the go-to attorney in their community, and they can do the same for you. To get started, they're offering listeners of The Law Entrepreneur a free copy of their anti-SEO report. Just go to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, to get your free copy. Spotlight Branding, a better way to market your law practice. Law school didn't teach you the business of law. I know how hard you work. As you practice law, manage your firm, rainmake, making sure the bills are paid, you wear so many hats. Do you feel like you're stuck in neutral all the while working more and more hours? Fortune 500 CEOs all have coaches. Why don't you? You've got to talk to my friends at lawcoaching.com. Lawcoaching.com has coached solo, small firm, and medium-sized firms like you to huge growths. Head coach Anthony Geraci coached his firm to 490% increase over 5 years, and he can do it for you. Are you tired of trying to find great associates to do your work? Do you want more freedom to grow your firm? Then you've got to talk to Anthony Geraci and lawcoaching.com at 855-455-0050. Or visit them at lawcoaching.com/partners/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, and receive 20% off for the first month. You deserve to invest in yourself and take your firm to exceptional results. So, all right. So now you made this choice. You made this decision. You responded to the entrepreneurial voice in your head that says, you know, go forth, young man, and be successful. What were the challenges that you then faced, and how did you decide to, or in what way did you decide to create that vision?
Well, the challenges initially were just like, how the heck do I do this?
Yeah.
What do I need to do to start a business? You know,
you couldn't draw on your law school training in that area?
No, you know, I'm trying to think of contracts that none of that. And the Socratic method didn't really help me figure out how to get a tax ID. So I was fortunate from the very beginning when I first decided to go, I hooked up with a business coach. His name is David Kelly with the Growth Solutions team. And they were, you know, clearly very helpful and still are, but were very helpful early on in how do I do things like that in terms of, starting a business, tax ID, all those little things that I just want to go work, right? I want to go get cases. I want to market, right? But there's things you got to do before you can do to get that out there. And so the first step was just getting a space to go to, really. That was the biggest challenge early on. I did not want to work from home.
Well, not with two kids and a third on the way.
Yeah, exactly. But I also, you know, listen, if I'm going to go out and say I'm starting a firm, I got to look like something. I don't want to meet people at a Starbucks. Yeah. Now, people can do that, and that's a starting point. And I may have ended up doing that, but I had a very fortunate situation with a colleague and mentor who was a solo and kind of, you know, owned a building, kind of converted house and had space upstairs. And I just rented a room up there, you know, and very low rent. It was just a room, you know, a bedroom, really, in one of these converted houses, and got started that way.
Yeah. And you know, I know my own vision as well. That's I've matured and changed over the years as I've changed practice areas. But when I went out solo, I had the same thing. You know, I had a vision that I wanted, that I needed an office. Now, did I really need an office? No. But for me, for the image and the concept of what I wanted to create, I wanted a physical office. And I got even more specific in my kind of fantasies. For some reason, I wanted an environment where there was an elevator. You know, I wanted my clients to go up an elevator to my office. Now, I don't know why I had that thought, but that aspect of defining the physical space that I wanted to be in was much more clear than anything else. You know, it's odd.
Yeah, but it could also be about you too. About how do you feel? What kind of confidence does it give you? As opposed to working out of your basement, right? Yeah. And that mindset as well. I mean, I may have done that. You know, I looked at all these Regis spaces, whatever, but I was fortunate to have that.
Yeah, well, so it worked out fine. So you create some physical space for yourself. You put your nameplate on the door, and pretty soon just a flock of people come flooding through the door.
What's the opposite of a flock? Well, there's a flock, and then there's a single bird. I don't know what the opposite of that is. Well, yeah. I had been, the firm I came from, I was bringing in my own cases by the time I left.
Sure.
For years. And so, you know, I took a certain number of cases with me, worked out, you know, and there was a pre-workout agreement that I'd signed, a prenup, as it were, when I first started there. So I took cases, some cases with me initially, and then sort of build it from there. I started targeting, you know, started marketing the same way it was before, and then really focusing on other attorneys who had practices that kind of did some comp, but it wasn't their primary thing, and started, you know, taking some of that in terms of them, you know, referring it to me to handle some attorneys that had retired, that were retiring, and I focused on to take over their practices. So it just kind of built, you know, on itself. And the unions, obviously, that I worked with before kept referring cases to me, and clients began starting to be able to find me again, my old clients. So it just kind of built, you know, from year one to year two, we increased 150%. So it's grown really fast.
So tell us a little bit about your marketing then. I mean, it sounds like it's largely referral-based, which is understandable. But how did you identify and approach attorneys that you felt might be good referral sources?
Yeah, I mean, initially it was, you know, just networking with other attorneys who are defense attorneys, really, would say, hey, so-and-so is, you know, and I would talk to defense attorneys and say, hey, listen, if you know anyone, because on our side, I do represent injured workers. I don't have a whole lot of contact with other claimants' attorneys other than at the commission. I have much more contact with the defense attorneys. And so they would tell me, hey, so-and-so is thinking about retiring, and I would get contacts that way. I was very intentional, Neil, when I first went out. I didn't want to spend any money whatsoever on any sort of digital marketing because, one, just because of cash flow purposes. I mean, you know, it's, you don't want to chase that dollar that way initially. I wanted to build it organically. I'm very close to doing that and signing on with a company here in the next couple of weeks to start doing that. But Google reviews have been really important in my practice in a couple of ways, and Facebook reviews as well. But it's, one, people organically finding me with the number of views I have. And then also clients from 5 years ago can Google me, if they get my name, you know, they spell my name right, I want to pop right up now at this point. So that's just kind of how it's built on itself. And the union work has continued to grow. And that's how it's just kind of has grown.
Yeah. Have you done anything specifically to solicit Google and Facebook reviews?
Absolutely. We ask. Okay. You know, people ask me, how do you get reviews? I mean, you got to ask, you know, and so we do it two different ways. So we use a CRM, was called Lexicata, now called part of Clio, called Clio Grow.
Sure.
So within Clio Grow, they have automated emails. So whenever someone's case comes to a conclusion, and, you know, if they're obviously when they're happy, we ask them, would you be willing to do a really quick review? And for my staff, it's just a drag down, self-populated email. There's a link. And then also, the more effective way has definitely been text messaging. So we use a program called ZipWhip to do a bunch of different stuff with our clients, but we also do it that way. They have, you can build templates into ZipWhip. So you can send a text right from the computer that populates the information, a link right to Google or Facebook or whatever else, and they do it right then. I think we have a little bit higher success rate than, I think it's normally it's 10 to 20%. Ours is a little bit higher than that, but it's been really successful that way.
I've heard of ZipWhip. I have not looked at it specifically, but we did have folks on the show from another platform called Podium, which is fairly similar.
I heard that one. That was a very interesting program to me based on the way they post on multiple sites, I believe is what you,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's primarily through text messaging. And for me, and you might have the same in your situation. For me, my clientele is skewing a little younger by design, and they are doing everything via text message.
Absolutely.
I have a hard time sometimes getting them to even answer their emails. And so email marketing, which is really very effective in lots of other ways with this particular segment of the population, isn't as effective as it could be. Text messaging is much more effective. And I was a little surprised by that when I talked to the folks at Podium. You know, they create that expectation with the client that you're going to be communicating via text message. And so that whole platform, and it works very similar to ZipWhip. And I think you're smart to kind of focus on that, because there's going to be more and more of that. I mean, I just got through, as an example, got through going to a new doctor. When you get as old as I am, you do that more and more frequently.
Right.
But I went to a new doctor. They did the entire engagement through text messaging. I was really surprised. And even so far as to go and complete a multi-page patient history through text messaging.
It's amazing.
It's really amazing. So I think that's a platform worth continuing to explore.
The automation part of it, you talked about that you're changing clientele that wants the text. Automation was something that I've been obsessed about and very focused on when I first started my practice. Wanted to automate as many systems as possible, because now most clients don't even want to come into the office.
Exactly.
Even on intake. And it's not a matter of me not wanting to meet them. They would much prefer to do everything electronically. And so we're set up to do that. I probably meet less than 5% of clients in person. And not because I don't want to. I always welcome to meet anyone. And I always give them the option, hey, would you want to do it electronically or do you want to come in person? Like, oh, I'd just rather do it electronically. And that's what we do.
I think that's more and more the case. Now, so there's a great segue, because I wanted to ask you about your technology. You mentioned Clio. Mm-hmm. Clio Grow, formerly Lexicata, and ZipWhip. So were you a techie from the get-go, or how did you know that you wanted to focus on increasing productivity through technology?
Well, I think just from a business model, right? Workers' comp is the nature of it is it's not med-mal in that sense, right? I mean, the fee structure and the way that it's done, it's definitely a volume-based practice. Yeah. To be able to have a business, you have to have, you can be as passionate as you want about injured workers. You only got 10 clients, you're not going to be open very long. You're not going to be able to keep the lights on. So for me, I wanted to be as automated as possible from the very, from the get-go. So the number one thing was I was going to be paperless from the very beginning. So
which is a big challenge when you talk about workers' comp because it's so form-driven.
It is so form-driven, but you know, we've been able to do it. I mean, yeah. Medical records now are all electronic for the most part, or if they're not, we scan them right in to Clio with an integrated scanner and it goes right in. You know, we have a very strict labeling process for documents and allows me in Clio, as you know, is web-based, so I can be working from anywhere to be able to access that. And we use that and Google Suite, G Suite as well.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150. That's like the Law Entrepreneur 150 for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. Now, your choice of Clio, how did you come to that?
It's one of those things where it was a quick decision, really. You know, as many people as when you're very, you know, take your time to figure out what you want. I mean, I really just focused in on listening to your podcast and listening to other podcasts about starting a practice. Had kind of, and colleagues had focused on my case and Clio. And, you know, I did some, you know, just testing of both of them and felt like Clio had more legs and more personalization on it. You could do a lot more that way. And so, you know, I got it and I haven't really thought about changing it because it's been very effective for me.
You're happy with it?
Yeah, I am happy with it, but I've not tried it really anything else. I didn't come from a firm that had a very robust system like Needles. So for me, it's our staff likes it. And there's things that, you know, I'm probably only using whatever percentage of it that I can, but we use it for document automation and with Lexicata now with them, it's even better.
Yeah. So you can also, for our listeners who aren't familiar, Lexicata was basically an intake management system that allowed you to capture all the information from potential clients. And then you were able to export it and use it in your practice management software. Clio acquired Lexicata a few months back. And so now that's the front end of the Clio system. And they rebranded as Clio Bro.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. So now you because of the nature of your practice, you don't have to send out invoicing. So you don't have to do billing from from Clio.
Correct. No, we don't have to do any of that. You know, we send out the retainer and medical authorization through Clio Grow, who kind of, I think they use the HelloSign backend stuff. So
right.
And so they sign, clients sign everything through there. It comes right back into the system. And then we just convert it over into Clio.
And as you said, you know, from a volume basis, you know, a practice that has to keep up the number of cases that they're working on in order to generate the revenue necessary to grow, efficiency is money. And that's true. It's true in every practice, but more so in a high turnover practice of bankruptcy, workers' comp, and the like. The more efficient you can deliver the services, the more profitable you will be,
and the happier clients you have.
And the happier your clients will be.
Yeah, right. I mean, for sure. If you're in a situation, you know, we're very, my staff, you know, you can't run a high volume practice on a legal pad.
No.
You know, it doesn't matter how passionate you are.
You're going to lose something.
You're going to lose something. It's inevitable. And so, you know, we're very task oriented within Clio, set up, you know, 3 years out when they first come in, and that drives our practice, right? We haven't talked to this person in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. We have to call and check in. How's your treatment going? You know, how's your therapy going? And not out of a lack of empathy, but if there's just no way to remember all that unless you have systems set up on the front end to handle that. It's easier to start them from the beginning than it is to switch over
to retrofit.
Yep.
Yeah. So do you have like a full life cycle timeline or pipeline of tasks and activities that get populated, at least generically, when the client is created in Clio?
Yeah, so we have a 3 years of tasks that are set out on each case that are assigned to myself, to the dedicated paralegal based on the who they're assigned to, and those are out 3 years for each case.
Interesting. So you can actually do task assignment delegation within that generic pipeline?
Yeah, I mean, I created the tasks. They're right. They're not. I created them in the beginning. So, when we switch it over, convert it over to Clio, then we just assign the tasks out. There's a 3-year task we sign it to that person. It gets automatically assigned to the attorney, myself, the client, or the paralegal, and then the paralegal's out for 3 years.
Well, now you've talked about staff. Mm-hmm. Let's flesh that out a little bit. How are you currently staffed? How did you grow your staff? What are your biggest challenges with respect to staffing issues?
Currently, we have 4 paralegals and myself. We have 3 paralegals who are in-house. We have 1 paralegal who works remotely. And then we have a bookkeeper who in-house that writes all the, you know, does all the financial, writes all the checks, does all the books, who also happens to be my wife, mm-hmm. which is not uncommon, I know, in a lot right. of small practices. When I first started out, it was just me by myself. I was the place I was renting space from. I was using some of his staff and ultimately hired 1 and hired 2. And now we just brought on someone about a month and a half ago to be our 4th paralegal.
How do you handle payroll?
We use a processing company called Valley Processing. They handle all of our payroll and they do a fantastic job.
Makes it easy for you?
Oh, yeah.
Do all the withholdings and yep. filings and all of that?
I've never even attempted to do that, Neil. It'd be an absolute nightmare if I was trying to do that myself.
Yeah, I was, you know, just for audience benefit, in my previous life when I ran a different type of business, the very first employee I hired, I immediately understood that I couldn't handle the payroll responsibilities for even 1 employee.
No.
And so I used a national company called Paychex, and there's yep. you know, a whole bunch of different ones. And it's in terms of outsourcing, if you are creating staff in your practice, it's a no-brainer.
You have to do it. I mean, it's all those little things from, you know, Valley, which is a Maryland company, to my accountant, whose name is Scott Mattingly, to my wife, who does the bookkeeping. I mean, if I'm doing those things, I can't grow. It's impossible.
Right.
You know, if I'm out doing all those little things, then I can't grow. I can't focus.
And it's fraught with the opportunity to make an error.
It's huge. Yeah.
So I have the ability to make mistakes easily on my own. I don't need to,
create help with that.
I don't need any help with that. I don't need to create more arenas in which I can fail.
Right.
Tell me about, you've experienced good growth. Are you still in the same spot, or did you move? And
yeah, we recently moved as of 11/1 to have our own space. Okay. We were all crammed into a couple of small offices there, and it was a great place to be there. But we needed our own space to grow with our own space to create our vision also visually. So we moved into our own space November 1st. And okay. So we're still getting acclimated to that, but we're really happy with that. And it's going to help us grow and deal with the challenges of growth, which there are plenty, but always. This makes it a little bit easier. Yeah.
One of the things I meant to ask you back when we were talking about technology, I'm just kind of looking through my notes here. Do you use any type of service for medical record retention and acquisition?
No, I tried one when I first, that was one of those things that you don't kind of realize what a difficult process is, especially for workers' comp, is medical record requests. It's something that is, number one, it's expensive because you're putting out a lot of money up front before you're getting them back on the back end. But I used a national company for a little bit, but it ended up not. So I ended up getting a contract paralegal, and that's all she does. She does a couple other small things, but her main focus is on ordering medical records because it's such a daunting and time-consuming thing to do to follow up all the rest. And if we don't have records, it means our clients aren't getting paid. Well, so it's got to be something that someone's focused on.
Records is evidence. If you don't have the evidence, you don't have a case.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think people who may not be familiar either with personal injury or with workers' comp don't really have an appreciation for how time-consuming and how involved the records acquisition process is, because you got to find the providers. Each provider has a different way of obtaining the records. Each one has a different way of requesting it. Some are automated now, electronic. Others are, you still have to send a letter. You then have to keep track of when you sent it and what you got back, and then you double that with billings, the medical records and billing. And pretty soon, it's a real nightmare. So it's a big challenge, I think. And some people find value in using, an outsourced company to do that, perform that function for them. Others, like yourselves, have brought that in-house and made a dedicated individual responsible for it. It's just whatever works best for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So where do you see this growing or heading in the next couple of years or so? What do you plan to just expand in terms of the breadth of your cases or number of your cases, or are you looking to go in any other direction?
Yeah, I mean, our goal, our vision here is to represent, more injured workers than any other practice in Maryland. There are, again, some 60-odd thousand unrepresented injured workers out there that don't have a voice. And we want to be able to give them that voice, and we have to be able to get to them to do that. And for me, the challenge is as a business owner, and you well know, this as well as anyone, that the suck or the draw to be working in your business is sometimes overwhelming to doing very low value type of tasks. So for me to be able to focus on the business as opposed to in the business is something that I continue to work towards. For workers' comp, it's such a court-driven process. I mean, I can be in court 5 days a week with three hearings a day and from Cambridge to LaVail. And so now I'm fortunate to have a little bit of a group of attorneys that I'm able to contract with to cover hearings when there's a conflict. So, adding an attorney is something that's in our very near future, and continue to acquire other practices as other attorneys who want to retire but don't know how to go in that direction.
That's interesting. You are contemplating using contract attorneys to kind of spread your presence around the state?
Well, I do it now. I mean, contract attorney. They're not like a company. It's not like I've looked at those and they don't work. It's other solos that do comp.
That you've been working with.
Okay. That I work with, that I trust. They're not people I wouldn't you know, I wouldn't send a client of mine with an attorney that I just found through an agency. Right. These are attorneys who are other solos who do comp and vice versa. You know, if I needed me to cover a case, I certainly would. But they're people I trust. It's not a matter of not wanting to be in court with them. But if I've got three hearings in Baltimore, I can't handle that case in Cambridge.
Right.
There's no way for me to do that.
Right. But you all are looking in the future at possibly bringing in an associate to offload some of that work.
Absolutely do that. Not possibly. It's the next step in growth. I mean, it's what has to happen for us to be able to grow, because, you know, when you're scaling something, if you're scaling it, you can't stay where you are. If it's only me, it can only scale so much. I can only be in so many court locations at one time.
By definition, you've limited yourself.
Correct.
Yeah. Are you still working with a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still with David Kelly and the Grow Solutions team. We've been together for 2.5 years now. So it's been a great, great resource for me as I've grown my business.
Awesome. Sounds great. Well, Jason, listen, it's been great. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything you've had to say today.
Sure. Thanks, Neil. The website you can find us at is schultzlegal.com. The last name is S-H-U-L-T-Z. There's no C in that last name that most people for my whole life have put in there. Phone number is 410-870-9562. And also you can find us on Facebook at look up Schultz Legal. And any way you can contact us, any of those channels is the best way to do it.
Awesome. That sounds terrific. Well, I thank you for being a listener. I appreciate I know that you said that a couple of times. That's kind of you. Thank you for being a listener. And I thank you for being a guest here on the Law Entrepreneur. And happy holidays to you and your family. And let's get together and keep this relationship going further down the line.
I'd love to. And I just want to say thanks to you. Your podcasts were a huge help for me the 6 months before I left, in terms of how to do it and how people did it. And also just knowing that people did it and were successful. So thanks for what you do.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very kind of you to say. Thanks for being on the Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil.
Well, that will do it, fellow law entrepreneurs, for this episode of the Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors this week. That would be Ruby Receptionists, Jurisdiction, Law Coaching, and Spotlight Branding. Be sure to visit us on our website at www.thelawentrepreneur.com, or check us out on our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. Just search for The Law Entrepreneur. You'll find us. Make sure you consider joining our private Facebook group, where we'll be having some new offerings starting the first of the year. So I want you to have a great week, and we'll see you next time. And thank you for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.